SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So Bob Nightingale joins us from the USA Today as we continue talking about baseball. Bob, I've been talking about, good to see you, by the way, about the Rays schedule coming out of the break. Like, they played terrible baseball going into the break. They weren't winning at all. And now this Steinbrenner field situation is rearing its ugly head. Like, what do they have, 24 of 30 on the road? Something like that. Like, it's something horrific. Teams go on 6-9 gamers all the time. It's no big deal. But when you're talking about playing for a month straight on the road, doesn't that give you some kind of a problem? Like, I mean, I think that catches up with them. They're 1.5 out of a wild card, and I think they're already in trouble in the East. What do you think that schedule of theirs does to them?
I mean, it's tough, but sometimes when these teams go on those long road trips, it can kind of bring in some camaraderie. Remember when the Astros had to do that years ago with the hurricane, and they were on the road for 3 or 4 weeks. I want to say 3 weeks for sure. So, you know, hey, you get along with it. You get to know your buddies better. It can be kind of a bonding experience, but it's tough. I mean, particularly if you're going from, you know, the confines and where it's the same climate every single day inside a dome. I'm not talking about Steinbrenner Field, but the old Trop. And that's a big adjustment, too. So now to have it both ways, it makes it tough. I think maybe that's why baseball said, yeah, you can have the playoff games at a Steinbrenner Field, knowing that, you know, what's the odds of them actually playing a home game at Steinbrenner Field?
Yeah, and let me ask you what you thought of their sale. And whether you believe that this group from Jacksonville, this home building company, is going to keep them in Tampa. You know, this guy, Zalupski, has said that he is willing to keep them in Tampa. He's not interested in St. Petersburg. But my thinking is, like, you know, it's $1.7 billion for the team. I don't believe the city of Tampa Bay is going to build him a baseball stadium for $3 billion. I think he'd have to pay for that. Whereas if he went to Nashville or Charlotte, they would build him a stadium for $3 billion and he wouldn't have to pay for it. I don't believe him that he says he's going to keep him in Tampa.
Well, I do, because if he's not going to stay in Tampa, he's not going to get approved as an owner. So he's got to be telling the ownerships of their teams that, hey, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to finance a lot of it myself. They got to stay in Tampa. They're going to use those other teams for expansion sites.
Do you believe that it's all right? Get some water, Bob. I'm worried about you there. You got a little action. I'm rooting for you, as always. Do you believe those markets are going to get baseball teams such as Nashville and Charlotte that have been craving baseball for a long time now?
I do. It's going to be Salt Lake will be number one, and then Nashville. So those would be two teams. I think Charlotte's out. I think it's those two franchises.
Bob, do you want us to take a break? Because you've, like, you're obviously, you choked on something there. And I want to know if you want us to just take a break from you. Because we can do that, and we can come back and get you on in a little bit. I don't want to put you in a bad situation here trying to suffer through this segment. I'm pulling for you 100% of the time, as always. All right, you're all
okay,
right
we'll
now.
Dry,
thank
we'll
God.
Dry
I was worried about you there
we'll
for
dry
a second.
The desert.
You know, that happens to me a lot, Bob, if it makes you feel any better. I constantly have that problem. And I've been impressed by your strong comeback with the water and everything. A strong effort by you.
Yeah, but it's going to be Salt Lake City and it's going to be Nashville in 2031, probably. I don't think 2030, but it's going to be years from now. So baseball will never let a team move to those markets because they're going to get, you know, the big expansion fee of $2.1 billion. So they're not, the owners aren't going to, you know, just let $2.1 billion ride. They did that already with the athletics. So no one's going to be allowed to move to those two new cities except for expansion sites.
Do you think that we were hearing through the All-Star break left and right that the Yankees were going to get Suarez and Gallen? Are you buying that?
I buy that's what they want to do. You know, that's going to cost a lot. Suarez hit 31 home runs, over 70 ribbies, plays great defense, one of the nicest guys in the world. So, I mean, Seattle would love to have him back too. And Gallen hasn't had a good year, but you look at the season, he's 3-0 against the Yankees and Mets this year with 0.92 ERA. He's a Philadelphia kid. I think he'd thrive in a big market. I think he's going to end up back east as a free agent. So be a hefty price tag. But, yeah, if you're the Yankees, that would solve two problems with one.
Well, the Mets have to do something as well, don't they, with their pitching, if they think that they're going to go the distance with the Phillies? Or do you think they're just an automatic playoff team either way, as either the East or a wild card, and they don't have to worry about anything?
Well, they could use some infield help for sure. Could use another arm in that bullpen. Could use another starter for that matter. I mean, for a while they had a surplus. You know, now, you know, kind of struggling there. So I think they make the playoffs. But I'm with you, Scott. I think the Phillies are the team to beat in the East just because that rotation is so powerful. I mean, that rotation come October, I'll take that rotation over anybody in baseball.
Do you like the Brewers or the Cubs in the Central?
I like the Cubs, but I would not rule out the Brewers. We do that year after year, just like we do the Rays. And, man, a smart front office there with Matt Arnold, you know, great manager and Murphy. They get it done. For them, to, you know, the Cubs, everything pretty much went right. Yeah, they lost Justin Steele, their ace, but playing out of their minds. And here's the Brewers just chugging along just one game back. So, hey, the Brewers have done this so many times where they're sitting in second, third place at the break. In the season, you look up, they got a 10-game lead.
How do you think Mizorowski will do when it gets, you know, stressful, you know, in a race against the Cubs?
He should do well. I don't think it fazes him. We saw that when he was on the center stage in Atlanta. You know, he knew all the uproar about him being selected in the clubhouse. It didn't bother him the least. And pitched very well in that one inning. It wasn't like he was wild or all nervous. So what he did in Atlanta gives me confidence that he'll be fine come October.
So are those rumors about these cities that are, you know, they're talking about the All-Star games and the like. In 28, is it San Francisco in concert with the Olympics? Because I know they don't like the dates of the Olympics in Los Angeles, Manfred and company. What do you know about that? And what do you know about, because we've heard, you know, Wrigley Field is in the mix here in the next year or two. Where are these All-Star games going to be?
Well, next year, Philadelphia for sure. 2027, Wrigley Field for sure. They'll be announcing that on July 30th. That's a done deal. 2028's wide open. Could they do a conjunction with the Olympics and have, say, Anaheim or San Diego with Petco, you know, Park, you know, do that? Maybe. But right now, if there's no Olympic involvement, it'll definitely be, I'd say it should definitely, most likely be Toronto.
Wow. Like, why wouldn't they just do it in Anaheim if the Olympics are right up the road in Los Angeles?
Oh, absolutely. Or go down to San Diego where you just take a bus down to Petco. Both those places make more sense.
All right, Bob. It's good to see you. I'm glad we got you on. They're yelling at me in my ear. I thought I was out. I'm not out. I am out. I don't know, but...
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right. So they're still golfing, believe it or not, at Portrush. And Carver High just told me that the sun goes down at 9:48 p.m. It's literally 9:15 and there's guys still teeing off literally on the like 18th hole. That is amazing.
Yeah, the last groups are pretty much coming in now. So actually we have, where do they got these last guys in? The last guys are actually on 15 or 16. So they got two or three holes. They got to move a little bit here. They just clocked Rory and Fleetwood and Justin Thomas. 5 hours and 53 minutes it took them to play today. You know, that's...
I mean, what is going on here? I play a golf round that long, I'm leaving. Honestly, I can't play for 6 hours. And, you know, sit and wait for some old lady to hit a golf ball. Is there anything worse than waiting on a golf course for a foursome in front of you that plays slow? There's nothing I hate worse in golf than a round that's longer than 4.5 hours. 5 hours, 5.5 hours, 6 hours. That's nonsense. It really is.
I've seen a lot of guys complain about it. Lots of guys have complained about that.
Don't they play in threesomes?
Yeah, playing in threesomes. And it's taken that long. And you can tell the frustration.
Is that happening? They're playing threesomes. They're not even playing foursomes. And this is not some old lady with her husband. These are pros. They don't need that much time. That makes no sense to me. I have to ask Drano. I have to ask him, what is going on with the six-hour round?
Drano would be obviously a better candidate to know exactly what's going on out there in terms of what. I just think, it, you know, even though you see some good scores out there, there's a lot of scores on the other end too. So you do have a lot of guys out there making bogeys and double bogeys, and it's just it just backs the whole place up. Yes.
So this guy Rybrand from England, he plays with two gloves on, right? Always.
Two gloves. Tommy, two gloves.
He got like dishwater hands. What is happening there?
Rain, shine, or anywhere else. Rain, shine, or anywhere else. He plays with the two gloves. He feels comfortable with that. That's how he feels comfortable. He likes to play.
Kenny Smallhand.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know what the reasoning is for his two gloves, but now some guys do that when it's wet. When you got a little rain out there, some guys go to the two gloves. He does it. It could be 95 and sunny, and he's got the two gloves on. Maybe his hands get sweaty, and maybe that's why he stays with the gloves. Maybe he perspires a little too much. You know, it's possible, I guess. Never know. Some people sweat. You know, some people sweat a little bit more than others. That guy
called me a seal the other day when I rubbed against him playing basketball. He's like, "You're like a seal." I was like, "What?"
Like that guy.
It's 110 in here, bro. Of course I'm sweating.
Like the guy sweating in the in that video he sent you with the at the Coldplay concert. That guy's sweating too. How's that guy doing?
With the HR, the head of HR. On the kiss cam, and the guy's married. His marriage is over. His job's over. I mean, how busted was that guy?
He's the CEO of that company, and she's the chief people officer, which means she's the head of HR. And I was saying to you before, like, when they showed him up on the screen at that Coldplay concert. I mean, you got to just act natural. Obviously, you're doing something you probably shouldn't be doing. But do you agree that if they just stayed like that and didn't, like, run all over the place and cause a commotion, that everybody would have just been looking at the screen like, oh, what a nice couple, and it would have been so innocuous, nobody would have ever cared again. But they caused the scene themselves by running around and acting crazy. And run out of the picture. That's what got everybody gassed up.
It's pretty obvious that he's cheating on his wife.
But if they don't move, no one would have known that. Now, there could have been someone in the crowd who's friends with him and sent it to his wife. Sure, that's possible. But the video wouldn't have been sent to millions of people the next day if they weren't running out of the place.
Slow dancing with her. I mean, she was in his arms.
It's amazing. You can't listen. You're busted. That's just kind of what it comes down to. You're busted. How about this? I got more spew news for you, and not just about CEOs getting caught at Coldplay concerts like that. we've been waiting for this guy to get paid, and it looks like it has finally happened, Scotty. Be happy. Steelers star T.J. Watt becomes the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history for the second time in his career. 3 years, $123 million, $108 fully guaranteed at signing, $41 million per year average is the highest of any non-quarterback in NFL history. T.J. Watt going to the bank today, Scotty.
I mean, that is an enormous deal for him. He just hit pay dirt, and $41 million a year, at that, I mean, it's just crazy money. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. At the end of last year, and in the playoffs, he did absolutely nothing. I mean, when they didn't win in December, he did nothing. He lost Defensive Player of the Year in the last month, did he not? He lost that award in the last month because he did nothing. And I don't remember the last time he had a sack in the last month of that season. And then in the playoffs, he did absolutely nothing. And then you're going to give him $41 million a year, $123 million, what, $108 guaranteed? Million guaranteed? And then he's got injury history, and his brother definitely does. And he's, you know, he comes from that same ilk. I got to question that deal. I don't want to lose T.J. Watt, but they just gave him more money than God. And I'm not sure if it's worth it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So I did that on the spur of the moment. Like, I just remember I was at the Cincinnati game. And I know for a fact he did nothing in that game. And then they were in the Raven playoff game, correct? And he did nothing in that game. I mean, donuts in both games. Not one tackle, not one assist, not one sack, nothing. Carver High. And then I said in the last month he did nothing. I mean, I guess he did a little more than nothing, but it was pretty bad. Give me the numbers on what he did, because I guess one of the days he had two sacks, it was like the 1st of December, right? Like, it was like the first. Well,
right. If you want to work backwards, which obviously would be the more important games first,
okay.
Playoff game at Baltimore, January 11th, zeros across, no tackles, no sacks, didn't register a stat in that game. The week 18 game that you were at, the Saturday night game, Bengals-Steelers, which they lost 19-17, he didn't register a stat. Zeros across the board. No tackles, no
donuts.
Sacks. Donuts. Christmas Day against the Chiefs, he had three tackles, no sacks. So that's the last three games, no sacks. The first Baltimore game, December 21st, they lost 34-17. Four tackles, no sacks. So he had no sacks the last four games of the season. He did have two sacks December 15th in that game in Philly that they did lose. They lost that game, but he had two sacks in it.
And
yes. I mean, it was 27-13, but it really wasn't even that close, right? I mean, that game wasn't – they lost by two touchdowns. I mean, it is what it is. No sacks against Cleveland December the 8th. He had two sacks – at Cincinnati on December the 1st, the 44-38 win there. So
basically, in a month and a half, he had two sacks. So my question to you is simple. He just got $123 million, $108 million up front, $41 million a year. And we just gave you his, like, I mean, he's like a police story. There's so many donuts. I mean, honestly, you can't tell me. I'm sorry. He's not worth that money. I think he's a really good player. I don't deny he's their leader. He's their, fair enough, I guess I'll say it, best player. But where was he when it mattered? I mean to tell you, when they were losing out, he was losing out with them, doing nothing at all. Zero donuts, no tackles, no sacks, no assists, no nothing. I mean, nothing at all. And then you turn around, what, they're giving him this money. It would appear to me they want him to retire a Steeler. Fair enough. And he's been a great Steeler. There's no question asked. I think that they're actually paying him on past performance. Did I not just say before we went to break that he lost the Defensive Player of the Year award in November? When they got to December, he wasn't even in the conversation because he had evaporated. He disappeared. He was Houdini. Am I wrong, Mike? Like, honestly, like,
well,
I
he
love
only had
J.J. Watt on the Steelers. Yeah. I don't want him anywhere else. I really don't. But he also gets injured. So you're going to tell me he's worth that money? Like, I know the market, and they all get everyone that gets paid is the highest paid player in the history of the league now with every single deal. So I'm not surprised they gave him the money. But I don't think he's worth it anymore.
I don't think that he's worth being the highest. And like you said, I know they all jump over each other. He probably shouldn't be the highest paid player in non-quarterback in the NFL. Now, I'm sure in 2 weeks he won't be.
He does all of his numbers, Mike, in the beginning of the season. When they
right, I was actually looking. He had 6.5 sacks when they went to the bye. So going into their bye week, he had 6.5 sacks. You know, and that was only after, what, 2, 4, 6, 7 games. He had 5 sacks the rest of the way. 2, 4, 5 sacks the rest of the way after the break. With a lot of zeros in big games down the stretch. So that was he hurt? You know, he gets hurt a lot. Maybe that was it. He had 11.5 sacks.
A lot of zeros in big games. And how about donuts in the biggest game? The playoff game.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Good news. The golf just ended at bedtime. I mean, it's literally, it's time to take your lorazepam and go to bed in Northern Ireland so that you can get up early for the tea times at 5 a.m. It's 9:30 there, and they just shut it down. So that is unbelievable to me. All right, baseball returns tomorrow. They have a day game at Wrigley, Red Sox and Cubs, everything else under the lights. But a big weekend in baseball gets underway, as I said, Friday night.
Yeah, basically 4 days off here that we have had with the baseball, and we will get back into the mix with 15 games on Friday, including the businessman special at Wrigley Field with the Red Sox and the Cubbies, which will have Colin Rea and Lucas Giolito right out of the gates in the afternoon. So that'll be on while we're doing Coast to Coast, the Friday Coast to Coast. The Pirates have the White Sox coming to PNC. We've got the Padres and the Nationals, Angels and Philly. So Mike Trout returning to Philadelphia, of course, South Jersey, where he's from. Giants and will open the second half in Toronto against the Jays.
Yeah, I didn't like the way the Giants look going out, to be honest with you. And I wouldn't want to play that team, to be frank, all weekend long in Toronto. They're tough as hell. And the way they played in the first half and took over the East from the Yankees, I thought was really impressive. And then I think there's other good series. Like the Reds are in it in the wild card. They're, 2.5 out of the wild card. They're playing the Mets all weekend. Kansas City's in it, 4.5 back. They're playing in Miami. Miami's not dead at 7.5. You know why? Let me tell you why. In 2003, when they beat the Yankees in the World Series in six games in the Bronx to win the World Series, they were literally, they were nowhere in sight at the All-Star break for the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, they got in. And then the next thing you knew, they beat the Giants. And the next thing you knew, they were, you know, playing for a pennant. And then the next thing you knew, they were in the World Series. And believe me, they were nowhere near a playoff team at the break. If I remember correctly, I was, you know, I was in bed with the Marlins that year, and I was going to every game. I had a section in left field. It was a joke. We went there as a joke. It was literally the Forellavidians were a joke. It was all supposed to be funny. Like, they drew 3,000 a night. Nobody was there. The team agreed to do a deal with me to give away 500 seats every single night. Every night we would fill that section with drunks and, I mean, partiers. Like, you have no idea what was going on there. And then the next thing you knew, it was too late for them because they had to give me the tickets for the entire second half and into the playoffs. And next thing you knew, they were giving me that section for the playoffs in the World Series. And I had the hottest tickets in town. I was like a ticket broker. And I was giving them away on my radio show in mornings on QAM. Everyone remembers it. And then they went and won the World Series. It was unbelievable, Mike. And they were, if I'm correct, they were nowhere in sight. So I'm not writing them off at 7.5 games. I'm really not. Because you've seen their pitching. And you've seen their hitting with Stowers. They got guys that can hit on that team. So I'm not writing them off. I think that series this weekend will be good as well with Kansas City and Miami, if you can believe it. And I've already said the Brewers and Dodgers, I think, are the best series.
Okay. Well, here's the rest. The Yankees will open the second half in Atlanta. You mentioned Cincinnati will be at Citi Field against the Mets, Kansas City and Miami. A's will open in Cleveland against the Guardians, and Baltimore will be in Tampa there with Charlie Morton and Taj Bradley to start things off on Friday night. Those are the middle games, the middle five for you.
Well, they're home at least now, the Rays, right? They better win now. They're going to need it now when they go on that trip. I don't believe all that, you know, Bob told me about camaraderie. If you're away for a month, that sucks. I don't care. Name one player that won't say that sucks, that we're on the road for a month. Like camaraderie. They don't want to hang out with these dudes every single day, all day, every day, and then all, you know, three meals a day, and then they go to the ballpark and play, and then they go get up and do it again every day for a month. I don't buy that. I can see camaraderie on a 6 or 9 gamer, as I've said, not a 30-day trip.
Detroit will be in Texas. Olsen and Corbin, that pitching matchup we do know. The Twins will be in Colorado against the Rockies, Cardinals in Arizona, Houston in Seattle. So a big series for Seattle at home against the Astros coming out of the break, trying to catch them. And the Brewers, 7 in a row, into Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers.
Yeah, we've talked about that. The Astros, Seattle is enormous. And I think the Cardinals, Arizona is huge for the Cardinals. They can't afford to go out there and lose to that team that's already written off the season. And I think they're white flag city out in the desert, right? So I don't think the Cardinals can afford to go out there and fall a bunch of games behind in the wild card.
They cannot. That would not be good. So tomorrow, of course, we will get back to all of that action. We'll know all the pitchers by then, hopefully. We'll have all the odds by then, hopefully. And some long balls tomorrow night. We need to have a couple long balls to come back. I've missed it the last 4 days. So hopefully we can get back to some home runs sending us into a Friday night. That is for sure. All right.
By the
we
way,
will do,
they're underway. Yes. I'm sorry. They're underway in Pacers Knicks. I'm watching that now. I got that live. So we got a little Summer League Sin City style going on right now with my Knicks, who have looked awful in the Summer League against the Pacers. And we know the history of the Pacers and the Knicks. The Pacers always win.
They do always win. That is kind of how it goes. It is what it is in that front. All right, we have lots of college football to do, which I'll do after the break. Of course, more SEC Media Week And we'll hear from Kalen DeBoer from Alabama and several others as they continue that along in Atlanta.
In fact, today, isn't he coming back to coaching?
That's the word on the street. It sounds like that's the word on the street, yes. But they are just about in the books. There's one group left, the two groups left out on 18. So hopefully they get in the clubhouse before they have to.
Car lights behind them?
That's what I'm saying. Like they have to do like the Legend of Bagger Vance, get the headlights out there on the 18th green and watch O'Hagan hit it from the beach onto the green there. So who knows? But here's what we are going to know. Five-way tie for the top at the end of the first round at the Open Championship. Jacob Skov Olesen, Ha-Tong Lee, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Christian Buzeidenhout, and Harry English, all four under. And we'll share the lead going into round number two tomorrow at the Open Championship, where hopefully they'll play a little faster.
How big Matthew Scheffler's lead will be on Friday night at this exact time?
I don't know. I don't know if he'll have that much of a lead at this time tomorrow when we talk about that. Will he be in the lead? Maybe.
Yes.
But I don't know. He's obviously going to hang around. I don't think he'll go completely off the page here.
Yeah.
But he's going out. He went out early today, so he's going to go out later. The word on the street is that the weather's supposed to be a little bit better for the morning guys tomorrow than the late. So maybe he'll have a little bit more of the wind and the elements to deal with. Although he had the worst of it today, and he seemed perfectly fine at 3 under. So that's why
I'm getting up. Like I always get up super early. I'm not playing ball tomorrow morning. I'm going to literally watch like 90% of it. I mean, I'm going to go work out at some point, but I'm going to watch from like 5:30, 6 a.m. I'm going to watch at least 90.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Carver High and I get very excited every year right around now because it's talking season and we get fired up for it.
It is talking season. It's the best time of the year, that's for sure. As we get ready for another SEC Media Day, it's been Media Week at the SEC, but let's hear from a few more of these coaches. And we'll start with Alabama today, Scotty. Of course, Kalen DeBoer, tough job. He had to replace Nick Saban last year. And let's just say things didn't get off to the best start. Well, you know, 9-4. Losing a bowl game, that's not really Alabama territory. They don't really do that. So was the standard met in year number one for Kalen DeBoer?
What you evaluate to be the Bama standard, do you feel like your year one lived up to it?
Yeah, I mean, for if you internally ask us, no. Like, we fell short of making the playoffs, as simple as that, right? And giving yourself a chance to go compete for a championship. I think there's a lot of things that I'm super proud of that are happening within the program that are part of the progression. Yeah, we want it right now, too. We fell short. Our guys, you know, again, I'm proud of them and the way they've responded to, you know, us, you know, not realizing the goals that we, you know, set out to have getting back just to work and focusing on the main thing. I feel that's always been the case, but sometimes there's just ups and downs you got to go through, unfortunately, that we had to experience. But in the end, you know, we're going to take advantage of the failures we've had and be better because of it.
Yeah, actually, I don't remember Nick Saban. Am I wrong? Did he ever win 9 games? I mean, that guy won 11 games while he was sleeping.
And maybe in like his first couple of years, but not at the end. He didn't.
I mean, and not being in the playoff. Can you imagine? Nope. Like it was a failure. And here's another thought for you. I think they'd bring Saban back in 2 seconds if they could get rid of DeBoer and bring Saban back. I think they'd actually do that. Like I think they'd fire him and bring Saban back right now, today. They would do it.
I think they 100% would.
I mean, I don't ever remember. Like, am I crazy? Like, I just don't remember them ever. What, they lose four games? I've never remembered that guy losing four games anywhere.
And remember, they were 9-3, and they were bellyaching that they didn't get in to the playoff. They were upset. They were in, one of the last two spots out or right around there.
They deserve to be in.
Right. And then they lost to Michigan in the bowl game. Which the bowl game, you know, who played? You know, whatever. The bowl games are nonsense anyway. Of course, not only did they not make the playoff, but the SEC dominance, I guess you could say, Scotty, you've brought it up a bunch recently. Who's been winning all the national titles lately every year in the college football playoff? The Big Ten has been winning. DeBoer says not just Alabama, but the SEC as a whole has to start getting better and taking back the national championship.
Yeah, I think individually in our own programs, that's our responsibility to be to be at the top. Right, that's the expectation of, I know, at Alabama, but also the expectation for the SEC as a whole. You know, I still feel that the SEC, top to bottom, is as strong as you'll find. And you know, we experienced that last year. You had games where you showed what your ceiling was, but you also had to back it up and play the next week against again and. And it showed that every team in the league can win on every given Saturday. So, we want to prove ourselves as a program, but also as a league as well.
I got to tell you, like, I believe that is a vicious hot seat, a den of iniquity. I think the fans will turn on him this year without a doubt. If they go 9-4, you can forget about it. They'll fire him. Like, they're not going to just go 9-4 every year with this guy and put up with it. Not at Alabama. I'm telling you, they just don't tolerate it. And I, you know, at the end of the day, I think anywhere else, that would be a nice start to a coaching career, right? In a big time program.
Right.
Anywhere else you go 9-4, they'd probably say that's a nice start. I think if Freeman went 9-4 at Notre Dame, they would have thought that's pretty good. Let's see where he can go from here. But at Alabama, 9-4, what they're saying is, if he does this again, we have to think about getting rid of him. And we're going to have to pay him a lot of money to get rid of him. I always have doubted that hire. You know, I don't think he's a bad coach. I just think they're used to something completely different.
And he's used to something completely different. I don't think he's a bad coach either. But the places where he's coached and had success were not exactly the pressure cooker that Alabama is. Like, it's there's a big difference from coaching in Washington for the Huskies than coaching in Tuscaloosa, where it, like you said, like, imagine being upset about winning 9 games. You know, they're upset. You win 9 games, it's not good enough. It's like you got to win 11 every year.
Yeah.
It's not easy for Kalen DeBoer. Here's the Alabama numbers for this season. Of course, as they get ready after not making the playoff, they're -184 to make it this year. Their win total is 9.5, 11-1 to win the title, +470 to win the SEC. One of those wins will probably be week one. You know, they open at Florida State. At Florida State, quarterback Castellanos keeps running his mouth, too, about Alabama every chance he gets. Man, is he going to get that check cashed on opening night?
My goodness. I'll give you this. He's a great quarterback. I really thought he was good at Boston College for that hack-ass team he played for. He was really exciting. I think he's going to make Florida State better than that crappy quarterback that they had. I actually think they're in a much better place. But I don't believe they're better than Alabama at all. So I think you're right about that. And listen, the one guy, you know, what's the guy's name? Pittman? Is that his name? Who's the old guy at Arkansas?
Yeah, Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman at Arkansas, yeah.
I would fire him tomorrow for Nick Saban. I'd fire him right now, today, like right this minute, within 10 minutes from now. It's almost 5 o'clock. Fire him and hire Saban. Last minute change. And then they'd have Calipari and Saban at Arkansas. And believe me, they spend money in Fayetteville.
I think at least 12 of the SEC schools would fire their coach tomorrow for Nick Saban. At least 12 out of the 16 would fire their coach tomorrow.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Speaking of pressure, the guy down at the swamp, he knows what it's all about with the losing that they've done. But I actually thought, you know, they turned it around last year. I mean, first half of the season, they wanted this guy strung up. And then I thought that Florida played really well for him the rest of the way.
They did play very well for them the rest of the way. In fact, that's why Billy Napier probably still has a job because of the way that they finished things out a year ago. They won their last four games, including wins against Ole Miss, LSU, at Florida State in the rivalry game. So that stretch pretty much kept Napier there. But as you know, Scotty, this is the SEC, and the pressure is always very high, and so are the expectations.
The first thing I would say about expectations is we, when we talk about expectation, I think the important part is what we expect from each other. And I think we've learned that, right? I think it's not only do you need to block out noise, but it's absolutely necessary that you do it, right? So I think we've got to have high expectations for each other. You talk about our schedule, you know, I firmly believe that that'll be earned in the fall, you know, so we can talk a lot about potential for the next 40 days, but we'll play the games in the fall.
All right, then let's strap in. I got a buddy whose kid is going there, and what a rude awakening it is. That place is crazy for expectations, and they think they should win the national championship and everything every year in basketball and football.
Well, let me just give you a little sampling here. I won't give you every game, but let me give you some of the games on Florida's schedule this year. At LSU, at Miami against the Canes. Remember, the Canes thumped them in Gainesville last year, early in the year. This is the return game where they go down to Hard Rock. Texas comes to the Swamp. At Texas A&M. Georgia in the cocktail party game. At Kentucky, at Ole Miss. Tennessee at home. Florida State again at home at the end of the year. That ain't easy for Bill. That's a tough schedule he's got to roll with this year. God bless him.
Brutal. That's brutal.
Brutal. That's not easy. In fact, that's why I hear all those games and I go, 7.5? Can they get the 8 wins with that kind of schedule? I'm not so sure about that.
And then they'll fire him.
I agree. In fact, I would name them one of the 12 schools that would fire him tomorrow if Nick Saban wanted to come coach stuff. It would be Florida would go and they'd pick Nick Saban up in Bristol or in wherever he is.
Hire him so fast your head would spin.
Yes, they 100% would. Like I said, I think almost every team in the league would. I think the only ones that probably wouldn't is, you know, Georgia loves Kirby. Kirby's won championships. He's not going anywhere. I think Texas obviously loves Sark, and there's really not Lane. I don't know if I mean I'm sure. Listen, it's I think maybe just because he's younger, I don't think that Ole Miss would get rid of Lane Kiffin.
I don't think they're getting rid of him yet. I think he's the most exciting coach in that conference.
I think everyone else, you know, it's they'd probably be willing to let it go for Nick Saban. Here's Shane Beamer. Now, he did a lot of crying last year. I know you remember when South Carolina didn't make it into the college football playoff. He believes, get ready for this one, you can win a national title at South Carolina.
I mean, we have to earn our respect, and we've got to do it consistently. And when the rankings or predictions come out this week, I mean, the normal schools are going to be probably right up there at the top. And when I say the normal ones, the ones that have been picked near the top for pretty much the last 20 years in the SEC in a lot of ways. So we've certainly got to earn our respect. But in this league, if you show you're one of the best teams, which we've beaten so many of the best teams in this league. There's teams that we haven't, but as you continue to recruit and continue to develop, yeah, absolutely, it's attainable. And I wouldn't be here if I didn't think it was, Jordan. I didn't come here to go 7-5 every year. I came to South Carolina to compete for championships, and we're there, and we're continuing to develop and get better as well.
gonna win a championship in Colombia, huh? They don't ever win a championship in football at Columbia, at South Carolina. That's just all there is to it. You know what? I think he's done a really good job down there with what he's got. And I think it's a good school. People love going there. Students love it. And they, you know, they don't win big games. That's just all there is to it.
Don't win big games.